Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
The Blue Collar BS podcast helps blue collar business owners like you build a business that'll thrive for decades to come by turning that blue-collar BS into some blue-collar business solutions.
In this episode, you're going to learn the need for others to be involved is crucial to your long-term success, the different generational needs as you make a move, hiring and interviewing tips as you go through mass hire and individual hires, and that the community you move in, the culture matters.
Our guest today is Stacia Hobson, a dynamic and thoughtful Gen X leader who has learned not only about the impact of moving across town, but also across state lines. We hope you enjoy the show. Brad Herta, my friend, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful, Mr. Stephen Doyle, as we start the brand new year of 2024 off with weather that is not normal for this time of year in the upper Midwest by any stretch of the imagination. But it's good to be back. It's good to be back in recording mode and good to see you, my friend. Right.
Yes, it's great to see you today. You know, as I was reflecting on, I'm good at the BS part of this whole thing.
You are.
You know, So Brad, let's kind of mix it up a little. So speaking of this great weather, when do you think it's going to snow?
Soon? How soon? I don't know.
Right.
I've got a couple of landscaping clients that are waiting for it to snow. It will get all the snow. We'll get it all together. You'll get all your plowing in at the end of the year. So,
right. You may be plowing till June, but it's okay.
Exactly.
So Brad, who do we have on the show today?
So our guest today is Stacia Hobson, the co-owner of Image Industries Incorporated, began her career in the family business upon graduating from college. Although her plan was never to work for the business, let alone own it, she was key in transforming that business from 100% distribution to 100% manufacturing. Today, she runs operations for their multi-million dollar manufacturing business, serving 9 distinct vertical markets. Learning to navigate the family politics. I can't wait to hear some of those stories. Provided a sturdy and durable foundation for future growth. She is acutely aware of what it takes to succeed as a woman in a male-dominated blue-collar industry, passionate and proud to be in manufacturing, and feels the backbone of the United States. So we have alignment there, which is good, which is why we wanted her on the show.
Yeah.
And over 3 decades of experience under her belt, she has acquired extensive practical knowledge of business relationships and entrepreneurships. Recent current best-selling author of her book, Move to Profit, as she has moved her businesses 3 different times for various different reasons. And they're currently in Mississippi, loves her dogs and her quarter horses. So, Stacia, welcome to Blue Collar BS. We are delighted to have you here today.
Delighted to be here.
Excellent.
She says that now. Wait till the end of the. We'll ask at the end of the show for customer satisfaction survey. How is your experience at the end of the show?
Yep. So, Stacia, before I forget, and Brad reminds me that I forgot, which generation do you fit in with, identify with?
I'm Gen X.
Yeah. So all 3 of us, even though Brad's a boomer and I'm a millennial, all 3 of us are Gen X's.
Technically.
Technically.
That is a true statement.
That is true. So, Stacia, we've talked a little bit on the pre-show about the book Move to Profit. So as you've, you know, moved your business and the stuff and then wrote your book, how has being a business owner or working in the business helped shape for that book? Help shape the mindset for the book, Move to Profit.
Well, the move from Illinois to Mississippi, at the beginning part of the move, you know, you're just not really thinking it's that serious when you're doing site selections and working on grants and that kind of thing. And it wasn't until we actually got here that I was faced with my biggest mindset challenge. Of survival, literally survival. And the first 2 years was really difficult. And that's why I wrote the book was because there was nothing out there, any kind of information on how to move your company. That kind of move, that, you know, I was a $10 million company and was moving a 67,000 square foot facility 900 miles away and lost pretty much my entire workforce, and thought that my current workforce would have. Now, there are people in there, don't get me wrong, that without them, we absolutely would have failed. But I thought that I had a better relationship, a better bond with my folks, that they would have come and helped train in Mississippi, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they absolutely refused. And, you know, I wasn't prepared for that.
No.
I didn't really, you know, I mean, that my workforce was extraordinarily stable. I had very good relations. And I couldn't get anybody to come down for a week. Now, with that being said, I had six people that did not move, or maybe a little bit more, that did not move with me, but that did come and did stay, you know, in a hotel or in the group home or whatever. Some stayed as long as 6 months. Wow. And, you know, and God bless them. So I wasn't counting on that either. So on the right. Good side, right?
Yeah, you got both ends of the equation, essentially.
Yeah. So it was a real mental battle to stay in the game. And I was like, shoot, if I had known so much of this information for the move, right? Like, I would have structured things differently. I would have figured things out differently. You know, can't say that I wouldn't have moved. And now, 4 years later, and with the overreaching laws of Illinois, board policies, and et cetera, not getting any better, I am actually really glad that we moved. And financially, right. it was a win, but it was, you know, it was bad.
a long journey through the deep, dark tunnel to see the light at the end of it.
Right.
Yes. Yes, the when it started to look that the light at the end of the tunnel was not a freight train, those started to be some good days.
Mm-hmm. So as you made that move and transition, how did you celebrate the wins along the way, right? It's a four-year journey. How did you celebrate just those small little wins along the way with yourself or your team members so that way to maybe take away that burden of the tunnel is dark and deep.
Yeah, it was challenging. I can't say that I did that much. You know, we would go out as a team for dinner and so on and so forth for the people who actually moved with us from Illinois, as well as my peeps who were not moving, but who were there with us. We did a lot of dinners and things like that. But honest to God, we were all working 16-hour days. Okay. And you're exhausted. And then, you know, and then the guys from Illinois wanted to go back and see their families. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what they did.
Okay. Would you have put some things along the way in that journey to have some of those intentional moments of, hey, we got this done today. Let's celebrate what we've accomplished versus looking at all the things that are ahead.
Well, and so I guess, you know, our definitions might be a little bit different. You know, so yes, we did come together on a regular basis to, good job. Can you believe this got done? And another milestone is working, right? Like things that you just, you know, so little moments in the day or at the end of the day or the beginning of the next day where like, gosh, I didn't think we were going to, you know, be able to climb that mountain. And here we are. Great job, right? For all of us.
For our business owners, as they potentially are looking at their business in different, you know, locations that they're in. So there's obviously things you've learned along the way that help shape that, the book Move to Profit. If they're in that same mode of, hey, I may need to pick up my business and move, what are some key points that you would like to point out to them that help shape your book?
So I would hire a site selection consultant, absolutely, 100%, hands down. Even if you're moving within your same state, just X miles away, they know. And the reason why I say this is that they are the ones who deal with grants and economic development organizations and workforce development, investment boards, and things like that. They know the communities. They can guide you as to labor. Is this community going to have a viable workforce? And is this not? And so on and so forth. So that is one thing that I used the Next Move group, and they did so much of the work for me and opened up my eyes to different types of opportunities, right? And it's all about what you need, want, have to have, all of it combined. Mm-hmm. And then you need to make a decision and move forward. But I know a lot of people who have moved, small moves, and you don't necessarily need to recruit those, but there's grants out there that I didn't even know existed. So it's like, shoot. Because we were in Wooddale, Illinois, right outside of O'Hare Airport, and moved to little town Huntley, which is not so little anymore. But when we moved out there, gosh, we could have gotten grants to move out there. It was a little farming town. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that I could have gotten financial aid for the actual move or for, developing a workforce out there or whatever. So, just stuff you don't know.
Right.
So as you made that move, Grant, this last move was 900 miles, and you've had some of the shorter moves along the way. And even if we're moving from one block to the next block, there's that perception sometimes of, hey, we're not the same company anymore. Or people might look at it as, well, I like the old building better than the new. How did you keep the culture, your energy level within your staff members to continue to produce forward and move forward and keep quality, keep energized and stay focused on the end result of delivering for your customers at the end of the day?
Well, I think it has to do with, the owner's mindset or the CEOs or whoever is leading that move. And I never once, in my move from Wooddale to Huntley or Bedford Park to Wooddale, never once thought that I would have to think about that. Think about the culture. I wasn't even, going from Wooddale to Huntley, which was a distance. I was never even concerned that my workforce wouldn't come with me, which is really kind of egotistical, looking at it that way. But I know it's one of my friends just moved and she was really worried about it. I'm like, you're moving 8 miles. My goodness. Some people are going to be with you. They're not going to leave. At the end of the day, people want stability. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, people do not like change. They don't, generally speaking, like risk. And moving, changing jobs, moving to a different company takes a lot of courage. And, so I didn't even look at it that way. I was just like, we're only moving 20 miles. There are people there. People are going to come with us, especially initially. It was only 20 miles, 24 miles, whatever it was. But I'm like, I've got at least 6 months to manage, right? Or to build up a new workforce if that's what I need to do. Mm-hmm. Over time, the people who were traveling greater distances, left and whatever, but it was not all at once, et cetera. So it was not a big hurdle in my mind. And I know it is in a lot of business owners' minds. And then you get the questions from your employees, well, I have to drive farther. Are you going to increase my pay? Right. And those kinds of things, it's taking me, 15 minutes now instead of 10. Are you going to increase my pay?
I got three stoplights to go through instead of one now.
And that's a concern too. And I have always held my ground, and my friends who have moved, I've been like, just hold your ground and just be firm and consistent with everyone.
Right. Now, since we do talk a lot about generations on the show, has your workforce changed generationally throughout the different moves? And if so, how have you had to adapt to the different generations?
So when we were in Illinois, my team members were, for the most part, older. Mm-hmm. And when I say older, I'm talking mid-40s mm-hmm. through mid-60s.
Okay. Right?
And so obviously, you know, the people who are in the mid-60s are no longer with us, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And we also had started to recruit some people in their early 30s.
Okay.
But really, I was not successful in recruiting 20-year-olds. Mm-hmm. I wasn't looking at, you know, anyone in their 20s specifically. You know, when mm-hmm. someone comes for a job, I'm like, you know, looking at skill set, can you fit in, blah, 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 what can we teach you, and so on and so forth. So that was kind of where I was in Illinois. But my staff in Illinois was predominantly getting older, which is yep. a common problem. When yep. I moved to Mississippi, whole different story.
And you're not from there, just so you know.
Yeah.
I have, and I'm grateful. I have a much younger staff. My average age is actually 40, and I have 11 people in their 20s. I've got 16 people in their 30s. I've got wow. 11 people in their 40s, 6 in their 50s, and 5 in their 60s. Wow. So I feel much more balanced.
Kudos to you.
Celebrate that victory right there, Stacia. That is a recipe for long-term success, because yeah. you are able to transfer that knowledge and that wisdom amongst all those different individuals and also capture it in the different formats, because the 60-year-old person's probably not going to go create the Excel file, but the young 20-year-old can go do that and teach them and vice versa, and they're learning from each other. And congratulations. That's spectacular.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it's a very balanced workforce. And the thing that I find so... I don't know. I just find it amusing is that that if we're under 45, let's just use that as a very generic number. I'm not saying everybody at 46 does not do this. 46 or older, right?
But, I'll let you know.
Recruiting, I get the applications, right? And I'm like, okay, I feel like this person, it would be a good fit. So I will text the person to come in for a job interview, because if they are, generally speaking, 45 or younger, they'll respond to the text. They will not answer the phone. And if they are over, say, 45-ish, they will call me. They will get the text. They won't respond by the text, but they will call me. And I just chuckle to myself, and I'm right every single time.
Man,
that is I would have thought the number would be a little bit lower on the tech side, but I could see that age being about right, because that's that crossover area of.
Yeah. I mean, not everybody in their early 40s text, but a lot of them do. So it's, you know, I just have come up with, generally speaking.
She just called me a millennial, Brad.
I've been saying that for years, Steve.
Because texting is the number one way to get a hold of me. I'll pick up the phone if I've got your number in there. I'll pick up the phone. But if I don't, I ain't picking up the phone.
Yep.
He doesn't even pick up my phone call half the time.
But that's I don't. Send a voicemail.
And down here, especially, you know, and more so, I think it's true everywhere, but here, if you don't have a 662 area code, you're never going to get that phone answered. And
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, interesting. But they will respond to your text. So, but I have to be very specific in my text as to, you know, who I am, where I'm located, you know, very correct. Specifically. Yeah, very, very specifically, because a lot of people don't, even though it's a small town, don't even know that, you know, Image Industries is there.
Mm-hmm.
So for some of our audience, right, they're in the ideal category upon which you just described from the text bracketing standpoint of things, right? They're to the our audiences generally in that millennial audience, because that's where the podcast world has started from and lived. And many of them are that they're at that growth point. And you kind of talked about, you know, using the site selection type organizations to support their opportunity to move or relocate. Are there any other, hey, you should really pay attention to these things? You kind of mentioned the opportunity for grants, talked a little bit about the workforce and, you know, not that everybody's going to move with you for 20 miles. But is there anything else that's hanging out there that should be the don't let this happen to you words of advice?
Yeah. So if you, you know, if you're doing, well, any kind of move, right, you need to evaluate your community and what is the culture of that community. So, and can you vibe with that culture? Like, you know, and I know that sounds kind of crazy because you should be just like, this is the culture of the business and blah, blah, blah. But I got so much pushback from my early team members that really felt that I, you know, could not adapt. And I was like, well, that's really interesting. So that's one thing that you need to get into the culture and get known before you even move. And however that media is, if it's Facebook, if it's the newspaper, if it's doing charity work, whatever, you need to get into that, into the community, so that they, and especially if you're going to a small community, so that people start to know who you are, because know, like, and trust. If people don't know you, like you, and trust you, they are not going to work for you.
Correct.
And if they do work for you, it's not going to be a full engagement.
Right.
And the other thing, if you're looking for workforce training investments, where is the workforce training? Where do they stand, the workforce boards? So are they engaged? Are they able to? So like the colleges, the workforce development colleges, can they support your needs? What are your needs? Like, you need to be really specific.
Right. Yes. When we went through our growth phase at Bucyrus back in the day and we built our factory and we're trying to get, you know, we need to hire 200 welders, you know, to come out and support. You had to go through about 200 to get the right quantity that you needed to fill the workforce, because we had a large fallout rate.
Yep.
It was ridiculous. And the area technical colleges weren't able to keep up. And so we ended up having to put together our own schooling program to do our own training activity, which was a huge undertaking and distraction and all those other things that would have been great not to, but at the end you had to in order to support the end goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a great point. The fallout. My first 18 months, I probably turned 150 or so people. That's a lot of people. And at that time, my workforce was, you know, just 50 people. So basically I turned my entire workforce
3x.
Full time.
You want to do that with inventory, not people.
Right. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
It
was brutal. And which is, you know, I mean, there's a whole thing in my book about how to interview folks and, you know, and so on and so forth. And the workforce investment boards and so on, workforce development, they were really great and they are very logical.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not necessarily how people are.
Right. What?
A very logical plan that they laid out for me, and I bought into it, you know, hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I mean, it all makes sense. It was not good, because that is just not how people function, right? Again, it's the whole know, like, and trust. And you have to develop that kind of first versus that mass hiring that we did.
Mm-hmm.
So I would caution on, you have to do the mass hire, but mm-hmm. I would caution about the approach to take to do that mass hiring.
Right.
So what would be in the interviewing process, maybe post mass hiring, when you started getting into more of those onesie twosie type scenarios, what would be the What's your interviewing, you know, golden nugget? What is your, hey, this worked for me most of the time to find the right person the first time versus the second, third, or fourth time?
Well, two things. One is I changed my application to, yes, it still has on there, you know, do you have a high school diploma, blah, 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 GED, blah, blah, blah. But I changed it to read, what are your hobbies? What are your outside interests? You know, what do you do outside of work? And that is very telling in people's thoughts and skill set or in what you can tap into. And it's very telling as to where their priorities are, right? Yep. So if you have someone, and I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, but if you have someone that says, you know, my priority is my baby, well, that's not a bad thing, right? Because you need to take care of your offspring, but also right. Know that if the child has a problem,
they're
that
gone.
Parent is going to go.
Right.
And again, not a bad thing, just to be prepared, right? Because certainly I want people to be able to provide for their families, right? You just need to be prepared on that. And then the other thing, not to get like woo-woo on you, but I feel the application, like I, you know, see the person and I'm as bad as this is, right? Like an immediate judgment, how are they coming across? Are they well-spoken and things like that? And, you know, where not so much their job history, because that's a tough thing to go by these days.
Right. Very much.
Right. Right. Although I can, you know, identify which folks are working the system and, you know, and those types of things, those are indicators on that application. Mm-hmm. But just because a person's been out of a job for a bit, does not mean that they're unemployable.
Correct.
And just because a person churns jobs every 1 or 2 years does not mean that they're unemployable either.
Right.
So it's one of those things I, you know, feel that you would be really good in my CNC department.
Right. And that's very interesting that you say that, because I've got a client that right. We were just doing some hiring with, and he's like, hey, I've got these 3 applications. I looked them up on LinkedIn, looked at different things. I knew what their culture was like. I knew what was going on. I knew some of the organizations that people had worked for in the past. And I'm like, interview them, but here's the things I would question. And they go through, do the interview, go, how'd you know that? How'd you figure that out? Well, again, it's about paying attention to those things, knowing the cultures of different right. activities and paying attention to, you know, the visualization of what those things are. And is it going to be a fit or not a fit? And that can take out a lot of noise and energy right away versus, oh, hey, they've got the right skill set, but they're not good people. They're not, it's hire for fit, teach them to do the thing.
Right.
Exactly. And I walk, well, I don't, but I have my team members walk anyone who's looking for a job through the plan. Mm-hmm. This is, and show them the exact job. And if they want to sit down and try it, we do that. Right? Like as much as they want to, or that we can absolutely do. I think that helps tremendously mm-hmm. when, you know, by determining, right? You can see someone's horror when
you want me to do what?
Right. Yeah, my hands are gonna get dirty.
Right.
Right. These are fasteners. We're working in oil. That
right.
happens, right?
Right.
Absolutely. That's not everybody's bag. I get it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Your pants are going to get dirty.
Yeah. And your car is going to get dirty when you get in there with those same pants. So
the locker room is over there. If you have a problem with the locker room, that's a whole nother topic.
Awesome. Stacia, I have another question for you. And I always like to ask this for very, you know, the seasoned professionals. Obviously, you've moved a couple of the business a couple of times. So knowing that you've moved it a couple of times, what is one thing you would tell yourself in the past? So your future self giving your past self some advice. What is like one golden nugget that you would tell yourself that you won't mind sharing with our listeners that you wish you would have known?
There's so much that I wish I would have known. I think my biggest pain was moving the inventory and my finished goods. Mm-hmm. And I took, prior to the move, I took special care to get all my racks labeled and get all my inventory. I did a full count of inventory, not in 1 week. We didn't do any shutdown. It was, you know, 5 parts a day or whatever, right? And got that into our ERP system.
Mm-hmm.
We even labeled the boxes.
Yep.
For the inventory of where it went on the racks.
Yep.
And my failure was that I did not communicate clearly enough that the racks are coming, they are labeled, the parts are labeled. It doesn't matter where, how the racks get thrown up. Just make sure that the parts are on the parts where the box is marked and go into yep. that. Right? That.
Yes.
Location.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
All that matters.
We want A's and A's and B's and C's and C's. Just
exactly. Uh-huh. And I did not, I was at the back end of the move, not at the front end. And so I was back in Illinois and sending, and my staff was getting smaller and smaller, and I was just sending stuff down. And the receiving end, I had a new shipping and receiving guy. So he didn't know. But then he enlisted help of other Illinois employees, and they just threw the racks up and threw parts on any old rack.
Hmm.
And so we couldn't find anything, like literally anything. And it was painful. And had I been me, the, you know, gone through the process, me telling the old me,
yeah.
I would have said, Stacia, when that inventory moves, you need to fly to Memphis and get to the plant to meet and greet it.
And show them what to do with it.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you for sharing some of your wisdom and your insights today.
So how do people get the book? Where do they get it? How do they connect with you if they want to learn more after they read the book? And or understand how to leverage the services that Image provides for the industry.
So the book is on Amazon. And at the end of the book, I believe, or maybe at the end of the book, there's a QR code that goes to my website. So at the very back, little QR code. And that will take you to my website and you can email me directly there. You can reach me still at Image Industries, Stacia Hobson at imageindustries.com. Mm-hmm. And our webpage is obviously www.imageindustries.com.
Cool. Congratulations on your move. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations on creating a workforce that is built for sustainability. We can't stress that enough, how to our audience and even to yourself, how important that is to be able to build an organization where anybody of any age can come work in it and be yeah. successful. And you've done that. So congratulations. That is a big deal. And I am just looking forward to hearing more of your continued success as we continue to stay connected on LinkedIn, et cetera. So thank you so much, Stacia, for taking time on your day.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.